Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly interview show where top chess players, authors, content creators, and accomplished amateurs discuss their careers and share stories and chess improvement tips. Perpetual Chess is a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and we'd like to give special thanks to our presenting chess education sponsor, Chessable.com. For more information about the show, you can go to perpetualchesspod.com. But without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. Before we introduce our guest, just a very quick note slash reminder, we will not be discussing the candidates tournament. This is more of a long form reflection on our guest's career. For candidates content, tune into our Friday bonus pods, but we will have lots to discuss with our illustrious guest, who is a Moldova-born, Romania-based chess professional, commentator, blogger, Chessable author. She's the strongest female player in Romania. She's been as high as top 30 in the world among female players, currently FIDE rated around 2,400. She's a five-time Olympiad member, won the bronze medal there in 2014, was the youngest Moldova women's champion at the age of 14, and she is joining us amidst a busy summer. In April, she won the Premier Group at the Capablanca Memorial in Cuba, and she just won first place at the Târgu Mureș, which I'm sure I'm mispronouncing, in Romania. So without further ado, let's welcome Irina Bulmaga to the show. How are you, Irina?
Hi, everyone. I'm doing fine, enjoying my last vacation before a summer, like you said, full of action. So yeah, last day of vacation, and I'm actually very, very glad to join the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. You've been posting some amazing pictures of the Greek islands. I live in the suburbs in New Jersey, and I'd be willing to trade locations with you. Now, Irina, you've, as we've said, you've been super busy with your chess, and now that you're joining us from a vacation, I'm sure that gives you some time to reflect on your life and your chess. So as you do so, how do you feel about your recent games, and what is going on with the state of your chess game?
Well, this is a very nice question. Well, last year I've been struggling quite a lot because I was at my peak form just before the pandemic. So like beginning of 2020, I had a fantastic year. I was winning almost each tournament I was playing, like the first female prize or winning some Elo points. And I got a lot of nice opportunities, but then the pandemic came, and somehow I perhaps did not deal too well with it. And I had a terrible year last year. I lost 70 Elo points, and the results were far from what I hoped for. And I had to change a little bit my mindset and everything. And actually, before the Capablanca Memorial, which you mentioned, I was very down with myself. And I was trying to do things differently. Because I'm a player who really goes with the mood. Like, you know, if I win first game or I have a good few games in the beginning of the tournament, then I might have a very good event. But if I lose a game which I had to win, I had a winning position, then it's very difficult for me to get back in the game. And I tried to change that to think that, okay, it was a lost opportunity, a lost chance, but I will keep the good mood. And this is what I changed this year. And I'm pretty happy with the results. And also, I'm quite content with myself because the first time since like my childhood, I believe, I just enjoy practicing chess and training just for the sake of training, not for the sake of hoping for a good result or something. So I'm just enjoying the process. And I actually have an interesting plan for next year, but perhaps it's a bit early to disclose it.
Oh, wow. Well, there's so much to follow up on there, Irina. So first of all, you describing this sort of, you assess yourself as what we might call sort of like a momentum player. When things are riding high, you feel like things, you can continue that. But when things aren't going as well, one can enter into sort of a spiral. I think a lot of people listening will be able to relate to that. They might even be surprised that someone at your level experiences the same thing. Although I know that it can occur at any level in chess. But my question for you, Irina, is you say you've solved that, but you're also going really well lately. So how do you know for sure that you've solved it when you're also putting up good results?
Well, it wasn't that my last result, the one you mentioned in the Romanian, it's actually Târgu Mureș, but okay, it involves Romanian pronunciation. But it wasn't like it was very good. I mean, I still lost 2 ELO points, but I didn't lose any game. And out of 9 games, I made 7 draws and 2 wins. And I had 2 winning positions, like +6 and +9, which I didn't convert. And that was quite surprising. But I managed to not get too disappointed and just be patient, which is something I'm usually not very likely to do. And I was very content that I managed, you know, just to enjoy chess and not put so much pressure on myself, because usually I want maximum from myself. I want, okay, if I prepare hard for a tournament, I expect myself to be up for the task, to perform well. And if I don't, I'm getting disappointed. And then I don't perform even at the lowest expected level. So I think in that terms, things are going quite fine. But I will play a tournament, a very strong one, a ladies tournament. And that is something perhaps I should mention, that I usually don't enjoy much to play ladies tournaments. I feel that the psychological pressure is much higher. Unlike when I play an open tournament and I don't face only female players. But this will going to be a very good test. The tournament starts in a few days, on 25th, actually.
Okay. I mean, that's interesting because, as I mentioned to you briefly before we were recording, you've got a blog which traces, like, you know, 9 years or something of your evolution as a person and as a chess player. And it's really interesting to read. And one thing that struck me, there were a lot of things that struck me, but one was just how sort of close-knit the professional chess community is, particularly where you are in Europe. I mean, you see a lot of familiar faces. I get the impression you have a lot of close friends, probably particularly amongst your fellow strong female players. So is that why you think you enjoy these events less, or why do you think it is that you prefer large open tournaments, or at least open tournaments?
I was thinking about it quite a lot because in 2019, when my results were going up, I was playing mostly all female tournaments and I was performing very well. But in 2021, I did the same thing and things were going completely the other direction. But I think that the pressure was too much for me. The expectations were too high because when you are a lower rated, for example, when I was 2380 and I was playing tournaments with opponents like 2450 females, then okay, draw was already a good result, the win was already more than I would expect. But when you are going into a tournament as a favorite, things are different. But my feeling is that when I'm playing these tournaments against men, and this was actually my experience from this recently finished Open in Romania, it did not matter if I played against 24, 25, or 2200, everybody wanted to win against me. Like they felt that, I don't know, but this was my feeling that even when I played against 2200, when I play against a lady with 2200, draw is fine for them. But here everybody wanted just to win against me.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And psychologically, it was just much easier because you just play your game and you don't feel like you have to prove anything. Like, you know, you don't have to perform better than a lady or someone. Like, you can just play calmly your chess. And also, I enjoy actually playing against, but I believe that's about most of the players, that everybody enjoys playing against stronger players because you have nothing to lose. You have only things to win. And when you have to play against lower rated opponents, then sometimes you don't perform
at
your best.
Right. I mean, a lot of people feel that way, but some people might be bothered by the specter of obviously if someone plays a stronger field, they're going to lose more often. So that doesn't bother you, the fact that your expected score would be lower if you're playing a field of 2600s than 2200s?
No, this doesn't bother me at all, because for me, it's painful when I lose against a lower rated opponent, but not even when I lose against them, but when they outplay me from a position of weakness. So, for example, when I have a winning position or a big advantage and then I mess it up, then it's painful. If it's a logical game and I play a bad game and they play a good game, I think, okay, I did my best, they had a good day, that's it, you know. But when I had the chance and I messed it up, then it's painful. And usually it happens more often against lower rated opponents than against stronger ones, because you either don't get the chance or you don't get the chance.
Right. And following up on what you were saying earlier, Irina, you mentioned you felt part of the reason that you feel like you've sort of turned the ship around is that you've re-embraced a sort of studying for its own sake, studying for enjoyment. And I'm curious, like, how you managed to do that and what sort of study brings you joy? Like, what do you do when you're trying to have that mindset?
I was quite lucky because my best friend, chess friend, she recommended to me a coach, and I was very... I never really enjoyed working on chess with coaches after I started being an adult. I mean, I did it in my childhood and teens, but then I developed my way of seeing chess, and it was very difficult for me to build a trust relationship with a coach. So I tried mostly to work by myself. And this friend of mine, she recommended me this grandmaster, and I really somehow connected with him immediately. And I was expecting, you know, all of our training sessions, I was waiting for them, and it somehow brought back the joy of just studying chess. And what I liked is that he also recommended a lot of books to me, and I love reading. And I rediscovered my love for reading chess books.
Oh, cool.
Because, it wasn't a thing I did much. But now I have at least, I don't know, 5-6 books I'm reading per month. And I'm enjoying the process. And I think it's the most important that I don't do it just because I know that I have in order to play well or something. but I just enjoy doing that.
That's great. Well, I don't know if you'd be willing to say who your coach is. I'm sure our listeners would be interested, but we'd also like to hear which books, Irina.
All right. So from the latest, which I read, was Michael Adams with...
Think Like a Super GM, yeah.
Yes, yeah,
yeah, that's a great
that's
book.
That's one of them. And then, surprisingly, I didn't read this Jonathan Rosen's The Seven Capital
Seven
Scenes.
Deadly Chess Sins, yeah.
Yes. I liked, okay, from Adam's book, I liked a lot the puzzles and like really the chess content. But from Rosen's book, I really loved how the book is written, like the content. It's like I read the novel, you know, I just yeah. can't let it go. And now I've started also to read this recently published Ramesh book with a lot of puzzles and calculation exercises.
Yeah, it's hard work, that book.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So I'm curious, did you, funny enough, I mean, obviously interviewing chess players and authors every week, I'm relatively on top of the chess literature. And as it happened, I've interviewed all three individuals that you mentioned and, of course, read the books as well. Think Like a GM, a Super GM, I found particularly interesting just because of its sort of unique approach and appeal to a wide range of players. So I'm curious, Irina, if you went through all the exercises and got the score and all that stuff.
I think I'm at about number 33 right now. But it was actually quite depressing because when I started the book, I was in that lowest point, you know, I had. And I didn't get correctly the first two or three. And actually, when I started to read how the players were thinking, I saw that I'm thinking exactly like 1500 or 1700. And I was thinking, okay, what is wrong? It cannot be. Perhaps my whole chess is, I don't know, something like a fraud or something, I don't know. And then I realized, okay, I kept going. And one example I got, I think it was one of the only ones with which Michael Adams didn't get correctly. I got it correctly in like 5 seconds.
Right.
And I thought, okay. Things are all right.
Yeah, I performed about my rating in the book, but the fact that I got one puzzle that Adams didn't get, like, you know, that makes the whole book worth it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about.
But you've played and drew Michael Adams, so it shouldn't have been as big a shock to you, right?
No, actually, it was a very special game, that one where I drew him, because a friend of mine, a grandmaster, he was telling me, okay, now you get this opportunity once in a lifetime to play against Michael Adams. Just look how he moves the pawns. Because, you know, this is a whole art. They never go back. He knows in which endgame they will be useful on which square. And I was so happy to survive that game. And I was very surprised that he... I mean, I did not know. I would think that he would be disappointed after drawing me, but he was very happy to discuss the game with me. And it was an amazing experience, the whole Isle of Man tournament, actually, that year.
Yeah, he's a class act, for sure. So you didn't reveal who your coach is. Is that something you'd rather not reveal? I'm just, there might be people looking for a coach listening, is the reason I follow up on that.
Actually, I think it's not a secret. He did not mind, I believe, and I also don't mind. It's a well-known GM, Lubomir Vtáčnik.
Oh, yeah.
He did a lot of work with good chess players, and this day he's more of a coach, and I really like his approach and also his taste in wine.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, he likes wine and books. So he's yeah. I like him already. Yeah. Okay, so for listeners, I'll try to track down his info, but a lot of these players of Grandmaster Vtáčnik's stature, they may not necessarily work with club level players, so just something to bear in mind, but just in case, we'll try to get that information in the show notes. Now, Irina, you mentioned you've got this women's only tournament coming up. Are you playing, and obviously you're a many time Olympiad participant, are you playing this time around?
Yeah, I'm going to play in India.
Okay, and obviously representing Romania?
Yeah, assuming that I get the visa.
Oh, wow. Yeah, those can be tense moments waiting for visas like that. And do you take, I mean, again, I really enjoyed your blog. And of course, you memorialized a couple of the Olympiads that you've played in previously. Do you place special import on an event like that? To me, thinking of it, like imagining that I were, you know, a player of your stature and a chess professional, I might find it sort of double-edged because on the one hand, you want to put your best foot forward, you're representing your country, but it also seems like there's like a reunion aspect to it because just the whole professional chess world is there. So how do you approach that tournament differently is my question.
Yeah, it is a difficult question because in the beginning, when I just joined the Romanian team, I was barely the reserve player when I first played in 2010. So there were a lot of stronger players in the team whom I was looking up to them. And back in that days, it actually felt much easier to play in the team, even though there were challenges because I was coming from a different country and there were some like tensions. It's not so easy to blend in, though I have to say that it was much easier than I expected. But from the point when I started to play board one, it changed a little bit because the pressure was much higher and I was somehow used to scoring a lot of points on the lower boards, and suddenly I had to play the first board where I played against world and European champions only, and it wasn't that easy of a task. And the first time I played well, but then I had a disastrous event in 2018 in the Batumi Olympiad when I lost five games in a row, and it was very traumatizing. And somehow the team atmosphere also wasn't great. And I'm very much of a team player. I enjoy team events a lot, and I usually perform better than my level there. But there was a problem, like in the team. I mean, the flow wasn't there. And I'm actually very happy that this year things changed because we didn't have training sessions with the team before the tournaments for the past few Olympiads and European Team Championships. And now this changed. We work together. We got to know each other better because it is actually funny that I used to be the young player in an established team where everybody knew each other. But now actually I'm the established and there are young players whom I don't know. And it is difficult to understand how they think, how they want to spend time and everything. And these training sessions, I think they help a lot because everybody feels much more at ease with each other. And I believe that the atmosphere in the team is very important. And I actually, I have noticed that in women's chess, it's like more than 50% of the result is how you feel together as a team. And yeah, that's why I'm pretty happy with how things are going now. And I'm quite confident with the prospects of our team at the Olympiad.
That's interesting. Do you think that the team dynamic plays a greater impact for women's team events than for men's team events?
Somehow I've noticed that yes, because it's quite difficult to... I mean, there are still men's teams which work even though their personal relationships are not great. Say they don't speak with each other. But for ladies, I think that never works. I mean,
any theories on why that is?
Not sure.
Yeah, I'm not either. But yeah, they're certainly like the United States men's team are known not to be best friends, and they seem to do okay. So, is in the women's Olympiad, the upcoming tournament, Irina, is China the favorite, or do you have a sense of who the strongest teams are?
Yeah, I believe that by rating, China is definitely going to be the first rated one, given that Russia will most probably not be able to play. But there are many teams who are very close, like India will have a very interesting team with a lot of youngsters. And that's actually something which is very important to have another generation coming, because it keeps you motivated and you cannot relax. And I'm happy that in our team we also have two youngsters, 17-year-old, two players. There is also the team of Poland, who recently got the reinforcement, Alina Kaszlińska, good friend. And of course, there are also other strong teams.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it'll be fun to watch. And I know you're extremely well-traveled, Irina. Have you been to India before?
Yeah, I've been to India in 2011, actually to the same city, to Chennai, for World Juniors, but it was a terrible experience. So, this time I expect, despite all of my friends are saying that it's going to be very good, I expect the worst, and I hope to be pleasantly surprised.
Are you speaking in terms of like the organization or like food issues or what was the problem?
Yeah, I lost 6 kilos in 12 days and I couldn't eat like anything. I ate something in the first 2 days and then it was a disaster. And I couldn't get out of the hotel back then because, it was painful just to go out to see. I mean, I wasn't prepared for seeing life going on the streets in that way, like people doing everything on the streets, like, you know, taking showers and eating, basically living on the streets. Yeah. And you had to be careful where you step. And perhaps I was too young. I don't know. I was still 17 or 18, but it was painful for me. I mean, I didn't go out of the hotel after that first time. So I just stayed in and it was a bit tough.
Yeah, that's disheartening. Well, as you say, hopefully the things have improved there, and obviously you're older and probably have more friends, and hopefully you can focus on the chess. All right. Well, Irina, we need to take a break to hear from our sponsors, and then I want to hear more about your chess and chess travels. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by aimchess.com. My latest discovery on aimchess.com is, in addition to its algorithm generating statistics and telling you trends from your opening games, there's a tab at the top where you can go to game history and review individual games, and it tags recurring issues. So for example, it keeps telling me I had good openings, but it also tells me when I was behind on the clock, when I failed to convert an advantage. So you can then, within the Aim Chess platform, review the game and look for leaks that you need to plug, things to correct. So one of the many ways you can use aimchess.com to improve your game. So you can check it out for free. And if you choose to subscribe, use the code perpetual30 to save 30%, or you can also use the link on aimchess.com that is provided in the show description.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. And in reading through Irina's blog, which she confessed to me before we were recording, she's not sure how certain she'll be updating it. She is writing for ChessBase and recently covered her most recent tournament on ChessBase.com. I'll link to that as well. But I really did enjoy this sort of view of professional chess. And one thing that struck me is, Irina, like if you play through people's games, you know, the location doesn't leave that much of a mark. You know, as a chess fan, you just look at the game and don't think about it that much. But just to see, for an active player, you're going to so many places, like you spend so much time traveling. And luckily, you're an enthusiastic traveler, but it really brought into, it really made me note just how busy you are and how infrequently you are home. And now you've been doing this for practically 10 years, although you did manage to get a degree. But I'm just curious, Irina, like, A, how often are you home? And B, like, in the intervening years, since you haven't been blogging as much, if you're still enjoying the lifestyle as much as you primarily seem to enjoy when you were writing about it frequently.
So I'm still definitely enjoying a lot my traveling lifestyle, though especially the pandemic, I was thinking, okay, how does it come that I know absolutely none of my neighbors? But it has its downsides, and there are also, of course, positive things. From the downsides, I mean, I've started to think about it more recently. You know, I was thinking that many times when chess players are unhappy, perhaps with their contracts or with the conditions offered by their federations, they only think from the financial point of view. But I'm actually unhappy not because of that primarily, but because of the thing that chess is seen differently these days. I don't know, perhaps in the US it's different, but in Romania, if you tell someone that you're a chess player, perhaps they will know Elisabeta Polihroniade or, I don't know, like players from 50 years ago, and they would say, okay, and what is your profession? Right. You know, like, and I think that it would be a great job for our federations to start doing, like, not start organizing, but giving invitations for chess players to join events where arts people or sports people or, you know, science people meet, because you really need to get to know inspiring people, because it doesn't matter the field, it broadens your horizons and gives you some inspiration. And this is something which I really lack when I'm at home, because I don't know anybody, because all of my friends are from the chess world and they are in different parts of the world. So when I'm home, I'm just, okay, either laying on the sofa and trying to catch a breath between tournaments, right, or, you know, trying to work on my chess. But I don't have this place where I could get inspired. And this is, I think, what back in the days, chess was seen differently. Chess was something which was at the same level with, I don't know, arts, science, and so on. And this is not how things are in Romania, even though I believe things have gotten better than it used to be. But still, this is the thing which I lack the most. Because, for example, I met a sculptor who represented Romania in the World Expo in Dubai. And he had these amazing ideas with different sculptures. And he was thinking, wow, chess is so interesting. Perhaps I could integrate it in some of my sculptures. And actually, this is how I think things should work. I mean, perhaps somebody gets inspired from knowing a chess player and getting to know some things about chess. And perhaps I get inspired from their work, you know. And this is something I would change. But other than that, I love traveling, of course, and I love discovering new countries. And I've actually come to the idea that if each year I have an exotic new country, a tournament there, I get inspired for the whole year. So in 2019, before the pandemic, I went to Vietnam, and I really loved it. Like, it was the most amazing experience I had until this point. And this year I went to Cuba, and I hope it will have the same impact on my chess as Vietnam did.
Yeah, I definitely want to follow up about your favorite chess venues. But on the topic of sort of professional support, I mean, I do think that that's definitely true to a degree in the U.S. as well. I'm glad to hear that you say things are getting a little bit better in Romania, but it's interesting to hear you say that, because one thing that struck me in reading through your writing over the years is, to me, it felt like it's, if anything, it's better there in Europe than in the US, because you do have all these opportunities to play in these tournaments. You know, you might not be getting rich, but you're able to see the world, to play in all these places. There's women's prizes, there's conditions. So I think here in the US, especially for female players, a lot of them end up pursuing life outside of chess after being top youth players. So I definitely think there's improvement both in Europe and in the US that we can hope for.
Yeah, I definitely knew that in the US it's not so easy to make chess a profession, especially for female players. I actually had the opportunity to study in the US one time. It wasn't connected to chess, and the second time it was scholarship connected to chess, but I was afraid that I might lose all my connections throughout leagues in Europe and all of that. And I wasn't ready to take the risk.
Yeah, I understand. Have you been to the United States, Irina?
Nope.
Yeah, it's amazing because you've been to so many places, you know, like on your blog, it was like 23 countries in like 2011 or 2012, you know, when you were not even 20 years of age.
I haven't traveled to the US so far. No.
And on the topic of travel, I mean, obviously, I've reasonably well traveled, and you know, we could have a separate conversation about just our favorite places. But in the interest of this being a chess podcast, you've written, you've played in a lot of sort of the big open tournaments. Like, you seem to have a great time in the Thailand Open. I know you've played like Isle of Man. So I'm curious. Oh, I believe you played Sunway Sitges, which is high on my list. I have kids and they're pretty young, so I don't know when I'll make it to that tournament. But I'm just curious, like, if you were to give like rankings for amateur players thinking of taking a trip or traveling within Europe to big open tournaments, which ones would you recommend, Irina?
Well, if it's within Europe, then well, I have to say that I'm a little bit biased and I have quite a big love for the UK, so I cannot help putting on the top Gibraltar and Isle of Man. Perhaps even Isle of Man will come first because it was, well, it's a difficult choice, Isle of Man or Gibraltar. They were both really, really nice. And that's mostly because I got the opportunity to play against players with whom I would normally never get paired. I mean, before that, I played against 2,700 players only in European Men's Championship, and that happened only because I started really well, because otherwise I wouldn't. But the whole atmosphere was really cool because the places are not that big and everything is focused on chess. The chess tournament gets a lot of attention. There are a lot of side events. And you feel just great there. And Sitges, of course, I've been there in 2020, just in the time of the pandemic, and I had a great experience there as well. So I recommend you go for this one as well.
Yeah, the pictures look quite nice. And do you know how many countries you've been to at this point, Irina?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not sure.
It's a good sign when you've lost count. And what about in terms of events? Like, obviously, we discussed the Olympiads coming up. I know you've played in the World Rapid and Blitz. Is there a particular event that you enjoy the most, aside from just big open tournaments?
It's interesting. This is actually why that project I was thinking at the beginning is starting to grow in my brain, because I've come to a point when I'm not enjoying as much as I hoped all these tournaments I usually play, for example, the leagues, all female tournaments, because my biggest dream for many years has been to become a grandmaster, a male, like an all-time grandmaster.
Yeah, not a woman grandmaster, just grandmaster. Yeah, I don't know how to describe it either, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, and it's not easy to achieve that if you're playing in all-female tournaments mostly. So you're lucky even if you have the opportunity by rating-based or title-based to play for this title. And I was thinking that perhaps next year I could finally stop thinking about... because normally why you take all these leagues or weaker tournaments, it's because you want to have a financial benefit, no? I mean, otherwise, if you could, or if I could, I would only play the strongest possible tournaments. And I was thinking to try next year to do so. And from that point of view, my all-time favorite used to be the European Men's Championship. I actually scored my IM norms there. I believe it was 2013 and 2012. Yeah, because they were counting like double. And it was so nice and so challenging, and to compete against 2,500, 2,600 players every game. If I would have the opportunity to do it or to redo my career, I would go only for the strongest possible tournaments, because I think playing all female events is not going to bring you anywhere. And it's actually an idea I'm trying to pitch to our Romanian Federation, that I think it's important for girls, even from a young age, from like under 8, under 10, there shouldn't be a separation in the like girls, boys. They should play all together, because there are fewer girls playing. So even from under 8, let's say there are 10% girls, 90% boys, the fewer the numbers, the less strong the competition is, and the progress, of course, will not be as high. I mean, as quick or, yeah. So I think I would redo that and play stronger tournaments. And okay, I had to make a balance, like from the financial and professional point of view, to try to think what is best for my growth and for my stability. And I made a choice. But if I didn't have to make that choice, I would go for the stronger events. And actually, they were the one which I enjoyed the most.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tricky issue. I mean, I know you mentioned that Judith Polgar is a personal hero of yours, as she is for me and for so many others. And of course, she's also been outspoken that she feels generally, definitely she feels for her, playing open events was the best course. And she feels that it's often the best course for up and coming female players generally. But then there's also the problem, Irina, that like men can be jerks and men can be obnoxious, and they can make an atmosphere less inviting for women players. So how do you balance that? And for young girl players, so how would you balance that? And like, would you still have room for some female competitions? Would you just have female prizes within open competitions? What do you think would be the best way to handle things?
I think the best way is to have indeed the female prizes inside the open competitions, because you still get to play against the strongest possible opponents, and in the same time you can make a living out of it. So it will be like a compromise, like a passing stage from what I see. I know what you say about the atmosphere. Indeed, there are incidents and sort of things like that. But we shouldn't forget, actually, I recently had a conversation about it with a close friend of mine who actually isn't connected to chess. And she reminded to me that this is a problem we face everywhere. It's right. Not only chess which has it. So it's not something which we should be shocked of or something. I mean, we are aware that this might happen, but okay, life is about challenges and overcoming them one way or another. So I don't see it as a big issue. I see it as, just as a step which you have to overcome at some point, and that's it. I mean, if you are aware of a problem, you are prepared to face it. So I don't see it as something terrible.
Okay. And do you think that things are moving in the right direction in that regard in the chess world?
Well, well, I was lucky, I think, not to get in trouble with these things too much. But I think given that the information is so accessible and things are, I mean, if something happens, everybody can write about it and make others aware. I think this helps a lot. And with time, it should be more comfortable to play chess for everyone, actually.
Okay. Yeah, I hope so as well. Well, Irina, we need to take one more break, and then I want to discuss your approach to openings and your Chessable courses. Perpetual Chess is proud to be brought to you in part by Chessable.com, the leading chess education platform. Chessable, of course, uses its proprietary move trainer technology, which has spaced repetition to help you learn opening sequences, tactical patterns, basic end games, all of which it will quiz you on repeatedly until you have it down cold. They have courses both for free and for purchase. One of their newest includes the Beginner's 1D4 Repertoire by popular and entertaining YouTube commentator and streamer, I am Andras Toth. So if you're just looking to get your feet wet in an opening, it is a great intro. And of course, they also have intermediate classics like Endgame Strategy and tons of advanced opening courses that you can check out for free or for purchase at chessable.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we are back. And as we record this, Irina has just recently introduced her second Chessable course, the Smyslov Roy Lopez 3G6. And Irina, actually, her courses, at least this one, are openings that she actually played. So I'm eager to discuss the course. But Irina, first, why don't we take like a big picture view? Or like, what's your approach been to openings? There are people who love studying openings. There are people who can't stand it. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
Well, I absolutely love studying openings. And as I said in the beginning, because of my mistrust for any kind of coaches, I sort of developed this way. I don't know if it's original. I mean, I cannot know how other players work on it, not all of them, but I think it's a unique way for myself to work on them, because I try to base everything on similarities, on associations, and on ideas. So I don't necessarily remember everything move by move, but I try to create a big picture in my head. And sometimes I have like 10 exclamation marks and some idea which is not connected to chess, but which reminds me of that move. And this is how the connections work in my head. And well, probably my strength as a player is the flexibility in openings, because I can play many things. I have weaknesses, but this is one of my strengths. And I enjoyed a lot making this course for Chessable. Actually, it is the second one. I made one more last year, and I realized that it just gives me such pleasure. I mean, I never expected to enjoy anything else other than playing. I was not sure if I will ever enjoy coaching or anything. And I was so happy during the pandemic that I discovered that I enjoy some other things in chess other than playing. And
You knew you enjoyed writing, right? I mean, you were writing at your peak. You were writing like hundreds of posts a year. So.
Yes, I don't know how I was writing a post every day, but I had my moments.
And so what's your approach to designing a course? How do you decide on 3G6 against the Roy Lopez? And like, how do you work with the engines as opposed to games from top players? And you know, I'm just curious about what goes into designing it, Irina.
Well, I started to work with these cloud engines some years ago. I think it was 2019, actually, when I nearly lost the game playing my favorite line, which brought me a lot of points in the Nidorf against a player from Germany. And I just played my line. I played everything. I remembered my theory, and I just got a plus. I mean, she got plus 1.5 out of the opening, and I realized that, okay, something is going wrong. I have perhaps to start switching on the cloud. And actually, it was very interesting because I had to reassess all of my openings. Many of them changed dramatically. Some of them just opened my eyes, like I couldn't even think about some ideas. So normally I try to build the opening course in the same way I work when I'm preparing an opening for myself. So first of all, I check how many top players are playing it, because it's definitely an indication if the line is good or not. If you have 27 plus players going for it, then it's fine. If not, then I check the percentage. So normally a line, for example, from black side should be between 50 something and, okay, let's say ideally 60%. So black shouldn't score less than 40%, then it's a dubious line. And well, if that works, then I switch on the engine. And it's very funny because whenever I want to prove that white has an advantage, I go for Stockfish. When I want to prove that it holds for black, then I go for Lila.
That's funny. That's a pro trick right there. That's good to know.
Yeah, and then I check the history of the line. I check inspiring games. Like, for example, in this course, personally, for me, it was inspiring to see a game between, it was Pogonina with the white pieces and Galamova with the black pieces, because, well, mostly I play against ladies and I want to see how the strongest ladies lose or win in the variation I plan to play. But there was also the great game which Mamedyarov won against Karakin in the candidates in round one in Berlin. And okay, if they play that candidates, then it's a sign that variation.
Yeah. We're only recording after day three here in this candidates, but there's been some interesting opening developments already. But how do you pick your opening? I mean, as someone who said you have a fairly wide repertoire, like how did you settle on the Bogo Indian for your first course and now Smyslov's line against the Roy Lopez?
So you sensed that I was trying to avoid this question. All right. Actually, for the second course of the Smyslov-Roy Lopez, I had training session with Lubomir, and we watched a game. He showed me a game in this line, and I thought, wow, that looks interesting. And it was exactly around the time when I had to pick up some ideas for the course. And then I remembered that when playing with the white pieces, because of course I play the Ruy Lopez, then this g6, I never really understood what is the difference between g6 on move 3 or on move 4, or if black starts with a6 d6 or with a6 g6. So I realized that it is not easy to play with white, and then it's a good choice for black then.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and let's be honest, getting to what I was asking, like with Chessable, there's so many courses at this point that I'm sure also, like, you don't want to, you know, like, I know there's at least three Nimzo courses, for example, like it can be, you know, you don't want to make the 10th course on the same opening, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I checked it out and it looks good. I'm currently not a double king pawn player, but I was thinking, well, maybe if I can play that against the Roy, you know, like, you know, maybe then it's like the skeleton of a repertoire. So yeah, definitely tempting to get some positions slightly off of the well-trodden Roy Lopez paths. So Irina, I've only got one or two more topics. One is, you know, we've got what you have coming up through the Olympiad scheduled, but it seems like, you know, I'm guessing you have some tournaments planned even beyond that for later this year.
Yeah, I actually have a lot of tournaments planned. I think before the pandemic, I was the most active player in Europe, at least among women, definitely, perhaps not even, maybe even among men. I'm not sure about that. And I've slowed it down a little bit, but still, I have around 15 classical tournaments per year. Yeah, not counting Rapid and Blitz. So I'm packed.
Anything you're looking forward to more than the others this year?
Oh, good question. I have one which I'm not looking forward to. It is the European Women's Championship, where no matter how the year is going for me, I always struggle. I seem to, be cursed to score plus two there, no matter how it goes, starting with plus five or starting with minus two. I end up on plus two with all kind of scenarios, but I still have the hope. The hope is alive, so I will still play it.
And where is that?
It will be in Prague 1 week after
Oh,
the Olympiad.
well, that's nice at least that it's in Prague.
Right.
Do how like when you're thinking ahead to a tournament as someone who definitely clearly loves travel, how much do you think about where you'll be as opposed to the actual tournament?
Very much. I think that a big impact on my result in the Capablanca Memorial in Cuba was the thing that I dreamed of visiting Cuba. I was visualizing it like every night before going to bed. It was my last thought and my first thought in the morning. So it plays definitely a big importance. So I'm trying not to choose tournaments in venues where I know that I might feel uncomfortable or where I'm not so interested to play. And actually, a tournament which I really hope to play this year is I'm not sure it will happen, but it's the Isle of Man Open. I heard that it might happen again in late autumn, but I still don't have the confirmation of it.
Okay. Yeah, that's another one I would love to play someday. And so we know you had a great result in Cuba, Irina, but did the country itself live up to your expectations?
Yeah, it's interesting because, well, it was a double-edged sort of experience. I knew it will be something unique and very different to what I've seen so far, but I didn't expect for the country to struggle so much. So it was a little bit saddening. But I was lucky to meet nice people. I was lucky actually to get friendly with some people from Chessable working and living in Cuba,
Oh,
and they
nice.
showed me around, and it made me get the prospects of how people living there see the things
Yeah, it
developing
makes
and
such a
going on.
difference to know local people wherever one is.
No, definitely, because I know some other players playing in the tournament had a terrible experience there. And we actually had, I mean, we were staying in the same place. We had the same opportunities to see things. But I think it's so different because it depends what your expectations are and how open you are to new things. This is why perhaps I think that maybe back in 2011, when I was in India, perhaps I wasn't ready for embracing it. Maybe this year will be different.
Well, when I spoke with Grandmaster Ramesh, he did describe it taking place at like a beachside resort. So, potential food and socioeconomic issues aside, hopefully it'll at least be a pretty venue. And yeah, maybe. Hopefully things have improved from there. I know that they're working hard to set up a good event. So we will see. And Irina, your English is excellent, and obviously you're quite well traveled. So I'm just curious, how many languages do you speak?
Well, I get around in quite a few, but to speak, I speak Russian, Romanian, and English. I'm decent, but not more in German. And I can understand quite well French. And I've started to learn Spanish, But I mean, my grammar in French is terrible. I know words. I can say un verre de vin rouge, s'il vous plaît, okay, or una cerveza, por favor. But yeah, other than that, that's it.
Well, it's pretty impressive to me. Well, Irina, this has been a lot of fun. So really interesting to hear about all of your travels and your chess. Now, on a closing note, you mentioned and you wrote about on your blog and you mentioned in an interview your lifelong dream of pursuing the Grandmaster title. And you alluded to sort of hoping that you could put an emphasis on tournaments where it might be easier to pursue that. So is that still a burning goal for you, Irina?
I think this is the only thing which keeps me going in chess. I'm not sure, you know, in the beginning it was just a childish dream. Then it was something which I thought won't happen. And now it's something which I understand that it really won't happen if I don't do something particular in that direction. I mean, it always seems that you work towards some goal, but it never really is the primary goal to become a GM. It is to go to a tournament, to qualify somewhere, to get to play somewhere. And finally, I think that I'm ready to give it all, especially since I've started to enjoy training so much lately. So yeah, this is my dream. And I have another secret one, but it goes along well with this one.
Okay, well, that's great. I mean, we'll certainly be rooting for you. And in terms of the training, like when you're fired up, when you're inspired, how much time are you able to put into chess study?
I can work. I can work a lot. If I have a goal, I can work. Doesn't matter how much. I mean, when I'm working for myself, it's like 5 hours perhaps. When I worked for the course, it could be 10 hours a day. But it depends how much the subject interests me. For example, Michael Adams's book, I mean, when I picked it up, I just forgot about time. Mm-hmm. And that's how it usually happens. I don't count hours. I just enjoy myself.
Wow, that's a great approach. Yeah, that's inspiring. Well, Irina, this has been amazing to hear about all of your chess adventures. I think it really gives a perspective of the work that goes into maintaining your level, but also sort of the miles logged, the distance traveled. It's truly impressive to see. So we wish you luck with your Chessable course. The most recent one is called Smyslov's G6. I'll definitely be checking it out and working on my backup repertoire with it, as well as one on the Bogo Indian. And so you mentioned your blog you think is dormant. So any chance of resuming it, or will you be writing for Chess Space? I guess the main thing I'm asking is, what's the best way for people to keep up with you, Irina?
Well, for now, I guess that they should better check Chess Space for updates on me. But perhaps from next year, I will be more up to date with the blog.
Okay, and the other secret projects will exactly be revealed in time. Okay.
They you have a feel for them, I have to say.
All right, excellent. So, and you're on Twitter and Instagram, right, Irina?
Yeah.
Okay.
Twitter is perhaps the best to follow me.
Excellent. So I will link to all of those. And yeah, good luck in Poland. Good luck in the Olympiad and with the Chessable course and everything else.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. Big shout out to my producer, Matthew Passy. I'd also like to thank the Blue Wire Podcast Network, with whom we are proud to be affiliated. Be sure to follow us on social media, Beneficial1 on Twitter, at Perpetual Chess on Instagram, or you can join the Perpetual Chess Facebook group. You can email me, ben@perpetualchesspod.com. And of course, last but not least, I'd like to give major thanks to the Perpetual Chess Patreon and PayPal supporters. Those who choose to join that community based on their level of support can do things like submit questions for guests of the show, have access to live Zoom Q&A lectures with grandmasters who often have appeared on the show, going over chess games, answering questions, stuff like that. And you can even get access to ad-free Perpetual Chess if that's your preference. So, but most of all, thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you all on the next episode.
Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.